I don't think they're going to have anything like that this year. And yeah, meet and greets. I know a lot of people like the meet and greets. I really hope that they're not trying to do that in some virtual way where like Tim the Tapman's in a Zoom call and they're just like taking one person in at a time for 30 seconds, you know. Welcome back to the Gaming Careers Podcast. We are now, I think, at episode 9. This is the second episode of the new format where we have co-host Ben Green with us. Benjamin Green, which one do you prefer?
Mostly Ben is what I go by, but the official name is Benjamin. Yeah.
But then you struggle with that Ben Green being one of the most common names ever. So if you're trying to stand out, you need to brand it somehow.
Yeah, I would totally do Ben Green if I could, but there's a bajillion Ben Green, so that's not happening.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we've got a feature-packed show for you today. We're going to be covering all things in the streaming industry, including Twitch's new celebration features, which is kind of targeting donations with an interesting 50-50 split. Twitch's also new implementations of some ad experiences for people that are using Adblock. GlitchCon, which is Twitch's virtual conference of TwitchCon that they run every year, as well as some more DMCA. I promise you it's not going to be something that comes up every single week, but maybe we start actually with the interesting DMCA topic because we covered it obviously in detail last week, but there has been some developments here. Notably, one of the streamers that we were talking about last week, he said that he didn't care about DMCA. Nick Merckx seems to have had some DMCA hits now.
Right, yeah. That was, I mean, we talked about last week, if you play with fire, you're going to get burned on that kind of thing. And he flew a little too close to the sun this week.
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting here, I think some of the developments that we've seen, I don't know if you caught the Devin Nash clip about how it's now also getting deleted clips. So deleted clips aren't actually removed from the internet in any way. And you can still quite easily find the links to these clips and VODs that you think are deleted from your Twitch account.
Yeah, so this is crazy because there is the clips are being stored on the servers even after they've been deleted. So these streamers have gone through and deleted years potentially of their content because this is what they thought they had to do, only to find out that they're getting bans for stuff they've already deleted. So it's not a very good experience. I'm a little confused about this though because it seems like people who've been getting notices for this, it looks like Twitch is working, but it's all kind of behind the scenes. It's working with them on this. I don't really know for sure. The other thing is I saw some people saying they have clips, and apparently Devin said this, that they have clips for like Doc and like long gone streamers on there still, which is kind of crazy to me. So does it go all the way back years and years ago, or is it just a recent thing they keep on there? There are a lot of questions there, but yeah, that's obviously a problem if they're deleting or banning you for deleted clips.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the liability now lies with Twitch in that aspect. If you have shown that you have removed the clips and you've done your part to make sure that they're not on the internet, then surely Twitch is the one at fault because they're still existing somewhere on a server. So that strikes me maybe more as a bug and something that they can fix quite easily. But yeah, the biggest streamers being hit by DMCA, that doesn't surprise me, as we mentioned last week. We've even seen Summit said that he has 3 DMCA strikes now and has deleted all of the VODs and clips from his channel, but thankfully not banned. Whereas Voyboy, another big League of Legends streamer, he is still banned on Twitch for DMCA. And I don't know quite how long that ban has been in place, but it's clear that the big streamers aren't getting away with everything.
Yeah, I mean, Voyboy I'm really sad about because I think it's not clear what he got DMCA'd for. I know he uses like a lot of SpongeBob imagery, so there's even some thought from people that it's not even music, but actual like branding and stuff from Nickelodeon. Hopefully he's going to get back. It seems like he's working with Twitch, and he seems pretty optimistic that he'll come back. But it's good to see that Twitch is working with some of these people, who like Summit, who've gotten those 3 strikes but aren't still banned. Hopefully that'll continue beyond just like the top names on Twitch and kind of not be a favor to the top guys, but everyone who can work with Twitch that way.
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult position for Twitch to be in because they don't want to lose their big creators who are obviously just going to go and stream on a different platform because of DMCA. But at the same time, they can't be really seen to bend over backwards for their big streamers and then not do the same for affiliates and so on. But I don't want to harp on about DMCA every single week because I think this is just going to be an ongoing issue where we're talking about it every single week and some new streamer's been banned or temporarily banned anyway. I think that's just going to be an ongoing issue. Why don't we move on to talking about the Twitch feature test of celebrations? I don't know if you caught this, but I saw some email highlights that people have been sent. I think it's just a better program right now where you can opt in if you've received the email, but effectively they're kind of trying to get donations off platforms like Streamlabs and Stream Elements so that they can take a larger cut from the viewer to the streamer.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, to me, this is not a surprise. It's like the final frontier, sort of monetization on Twitch, and they've done it with pretty much everything else at this point. So it doesn't really surprise me. I don't know how popular it will be for people. I think streamers will probably still just tell people to donate directly because it's, I mean, literally doubling your donation in that way. So it's gonna be hard to compete with. But I don't know. It depends on how they roll it out. I haven't looked too much into this, and I haven't seen really any official messaging. Maybe they'll talk about it at GlitchCon on Saturday. We'll have to see. But yeah, this, not surprised, but I depends on how they do it. It could be kind of exciting if there's like specific Twitch stuff that you get for doing this.
I don't really understand the difference though between celebrations and bits, because I thought bits was their way of targeting donations, where you know, streamers got, I don't know how much it is with bits. I think it's 70-30, is that right? The streamer receives?
Maybe. I thought it was 50-50. You could be right, though.
I think it's slightly better than 50-50, but this new celebrations one that's coming in is 50-50, but I don't really understand the difference from a viewer's point of view or from a streamer's point of view. Like, what's the incentive to go with a celebration rather than a bit donation?
I mean, you want my honest opinion? I think they just want more ways to give money to people.
You're probably right.
Yeah, I don't think it's really that different. Maybe people want to go for like really big drops or something. Or there's new ways to customize it or something. I'll have to look. We'll see how it rolls out, I think. But yeah, on paper, it really doesn't look that different from Bit. So I agree with that.
I think it's going to be so tough for Twitch to get features like this, getting some track with streamers, because there's already a better implementation from streamers' point of view. Like you said, where they get 100% or very close to 100% minus the PayPal fee of the donation from the viewer. So like, how can Twitch make this feature better from a streamer's point of view when they're doing a 50-50 split? I just can't see it personally. And I appreciate Twitch have to try and make more money. And we're going to move on to the ad experience stuff in a second. But I just don't see the celebrations thing coming to light in its current form anyway. But maybe, like you said, we're going to see it announced at GlitchCon. But mentioning that ad experience stuff, have you checked any of that out? Are you an ad block user?
I am. Yeah, I have two ad block softwares installed. Apparently, it's not enough because I'm still getting ads. Yeah, so I've seen this stuff. They're basically showing ads. If you have certain ad blocks installed, they've now started showing like every 10 minutes, I've heard. I haven't seen it as much. But this little pop-up that says, hey, there's something wrong with your software, when really you just have ad block blocking the ad.
I feel like everybody knows what they're saying there. Like, Twitch knows what they're saying. You as a viewer know that they're saying disable your ad block, but they're still going about this in this like fancy wording of like, something's wrong with one of your extensions.
Yeah. Oh no, please. You got to fix your experience. Yeah. It's not great, especially because it would be one thing if, you know, they just did this. The problem is the ads are so ridiculous now on Twitch. I was talking about this on Twitter with some people as well. It's just, you try to go into a new stream and it's a 30-second ad. You also have this problem with raids now too. Like, you try to raid a smaller channel or some other channel and everybody gets really excited to go in, and then you just get met with this 30-second block where you can't watch the person you've raided. And you're just kind of waiting there. Okay, we're really excited, but we can't talk to the person yet. So yeah, I mean, I hope they do something with the ads. I have seen some stuff that they have to make more money, like you were saying. This kind of came from, I think, Devin, is somebody on Twitter was talking about this with Amazon, just basically saying some really high ad revenue goals, or just revenue goals, and ads are kind of the way to do that. So they do have to make more money, it seems, but the ads experience is so bad. And I've just seen constant posts, even on the Twitch subreddit, on Twitter, about people just saying, like, this is awful. I'm done watching Twitch because I don't want to sit through and watch ads for half the time I'm watching the streamers.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, I think. Like, they're ruining the experience, especially, like you said, with that raid thing. Like, they must be pushing people off the platform during a raid because they're excited to go and, you know, raid a small streamer or whoever's being raided. And then they get a 30-second ad and they probably think, well, my favorite streamer is done streaming anyway. I was only going to watch 5 minutes of this new streamer. I'll just close. So that's bad for the small streamer. It's bad for the big streamer. And it's kind of bad for Twitch because people aren't staying on the platform. So yes, you might have got 10 seconds into the 30-second ad, which might make Twitch a bit more money. But I think the overall idea is pretty poor. But it's difficult because YouTube have done it pretty successfully, you know.
Here we are talking about YouTube doing it better again.
Yeah, is this going to be a common theme, I think, in this podcast? But YouTube also has a much bigger variety of adverts. That's the other thing, is you're seeing the same advert every 30 minutes on Twitch, I feel like, anyway. I don't know if it's because I'm in the UK and maybe there's less ad buyers in the UK, but I just get the same adverts over and over again. And streamers are feeling the pressure as well, because they have to run ads so that pre-roll ads don't start, which discourage new users from watching you. So like it's kind of a lose-lose.
Exactly. But that's also not very well known, I feel like. People don't know you can run ads at set times to block pre-roll ads. So I feel like some education would help there, but still it's just a lose-lose situation between those two options. And again, YouTube just does it so much better. Like if they made skippable ads, if they made the option to kind of choose where the ads go in your stream a bit more. And I know it's tough because you're watching maybe a 10-minute YouTube video versus a 4-hour stream potentially, but still, like, there's got to be a better experience than just forcing someone to watch through an ad for so long. I think also, personally, I don't think that the ads are that effective either. A lot of times the ads will just turn me off of a product instead of making me interested in one, because especially on Twitch, you see it a million times. So by the time you've seen 100th time, you're like, I cannot stand this product. I don't care what it is. I am never buying it.
Yeah, it's had the negative effect where the slogan like grinds in your head because you've heard it so many times.
Versus like we talked last week with AOC on Twitch, or even like brands just interacting. Like, have you seen how Wendy streams on Twitch at all? Yeah. Have you seen them do that?
Yeah.
That stuff is so much more engaging, and you get so much more, like, people in the chat, I'm going to go buy a Wendy's burger because how they're doing this. And you guys should definitely check it out if you haven't seen it. It's hilarious. That is a much better way, in my opinion, to do that kind of thing than just to throw a blanket, just endless ads at people and hope they'll buy something.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult. I don't know what Twitch needs to do here. They clearly need to work on the ad experience, and like you said, if it's coming down from Amazon that they need to make, you know, double their revenue from ads or something, you can see maybe why they've implemented it. But, you know, there's too many things, I think, going on Twitch right now that make me think, oh God, streaming on YouTube must be dreamy. And I know that Twitch has a lot of advantages in chat experience and things like that, but when we're talking so often about DMCA and ad experiences and making money, and YouTube does all three of those better, like, it's starting to appeal a bit more, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think both platforms have their own issues to an extent. Like, one thing on YouTube I've seen, I don't know if you've seen this too, there's been a lot of talk about certain ads on YouTube, because it is like an open ads platform versus Twitch, which you have to go through and get approved and everything. I've seen ads on YouTube for like CSGO hacks was a big thing this week that was on Shroud's YouTube channel. So like that's obviously really bad. I've seen the same thing for Twitch stuff. I don't know if you saw, there was some like Twitch follower buy service that got ads on YouTube.
I tweeted about this actually. It was a few months ago. It was about the same website 5 times for each platform. So it was basically, you know, get free Instagram followers or get free Twitch subscribers or get free Facebook fans, or like there was one for each platform that they'd made, a generic advert that was running before a lot of Twitch education videos on YouTube. So I actually, I tweeted out how you can block these domains. Like you can go into your Google AdSense, like, advert manager and block certain URLs from being able to advertise on your videos. But yeah, that is true. You are going to not have as much control, and I definitely saw Shroud complaining about the CSGO hacks being advertised on his video. And it's an interesting point, isn't it? Because as more and more advertisers are probably coming to these spaces, you probably do want to have a bit more control, because you're not just a streamer, you're a brand maybe, and you want to make sure that people that are advertising on your content kind of fit your brand narrative.
Right. Yeah, and that's where Twitch kind of has an advantage, in the sense that they're only going to put legitimate ads on their platform. Even if there's a million of them, at least they're not scams. Hopefully you'll see an evolution there with YouTube too, where maybe you can kind of choose the genres you want to have ads for, or, you know, YouTube does a better job with just blocking stuff like that, that's straight scams. But yeah, I mean, I agree. There's no perfect platform right now. And overall, Twitch could definitely take a lot of inspiration from YouTube for sure.
I think I also definitely need to educate myself on how live streaming on YouTube works in terms of ads as well, because I definitely don't have the knowledge there as to how that works, if people are getting pre-rolls, if there's, you know, ads every 30 minutes like there are on Twitch. So yeah, definitely some more research needed, I think, on my part.
Yep, same here. I'm definitely the most familiar with Twitch, and like Facebook, I don't know that as well either, but it could be just as bad, not sure.
So how about GlitchCon? Let's talk about that, since we're on the Twitch train anyway.
I love TwitchCon. I think it's my favorite conference I've been to. I haven't been to E3 or anything yet. In person, I love TwitchCon. GlitchCon, I'm not so sure. Have you seen any online events this year that they've tried to recreate, like a PAX online or anything?
I haven't, but to be honest, the only events that I've ever been to have been the Twitch cons. I think I've been to two in America and one of the EU ones until both were cancelled this year. But I just, the experience isn't going to be the same. For me, TwitchCon is all about meeting people. You know, I go and pretty much don't know anybody and just walk around, and it's amazing because I meet so many people that have seen my videos. A lot of people don't know my name. They just know me as the YouTube guy or the guy with glasses.
His name is Pete, guys.
My name is Pete. Yeah, I have a name. I have feelings. But I can't. You don't get that same experience online, right? I'm not going to meet anybody. So you're kind of just going to watch like the Twitch Rivals events or like the keynote speech where they announce new features. I guess that could be kind of interesting if they do that again this year. But
I'll be honest, like that's the only thing I care about out of GlitchCon this year. The Twitch Rival stuff is cool, but it's just basically like having another online stream, right? It's really no different than any other Twitch Rivals event. It's just around this certain day. So that's what I'm personally most excited for, is to see if they do announce new features. Like we talked about, maybe they talk about celebrations and kind of the intent behind it. And if it is different than Bits, hopefully there's other things too. I would love to see them talk about ads, because I feel like in the last month or two, that's been a huge discussion point with people and trying to make a better experience there. Discoverability for years has still been an issue. I would still love to see a better solution there. So those are kind of like my top three areas. Is there anything you'd want to see out of the keynote?
One thing that I love about the American TwitchCon especially is being a partner, you get to go to these like partner talks where they kind of discuss some of the roadmap issues or the roadmap features that they're building over the next like 6 months to a year. So you get a bit of a sneak peek, you know, that's your reward for being a partner on the platform. Obviously I'm just leaking all that info to anybody that will listen anyway. But I don't think they're going to have anything like that this year. And yeah, meet and greets. I know a lot of people like the meet and greets. I really hope that they're not trying to do that in some virtual way where like Tim the Tapman's in a Zoom call and they're just like taking one person in at a time for 30 seconds. You know, I could imagine that have been an idea that they like suggested, oh, we could still do meet and greets online. But honestly, I think that would be a real mess. So yeah, I've got to be honest, I haven't really researched much about GlitchCon. I've seen a few emails and a few tweets. And if there's a keynote, I probably will watch that and share some of the interesting info if they do share any, like I usually do. But I can't imagine anything else being really much of a spectacle. Because for me, and I think for a lot of people, TwitchCon is all about just the community and meeting people. And, you know, I guess a little bit about like browsing through the stalls that are there and seeing, you know, what brands are introducing in the next couple of years. Because I remember 2 years ago when the Go XLR was brand new, that was announced at TwitchCon, and their stand had a lot of interest, and I was kind of looking at it thinking, oh, it's a bit gimmicky, like it's all RGB, is it actually going to be a good device?
I thought the same thing, because they put like an ad in every single Twitch bag at TwitchCon, and I was like, oh, this is just some new cheesy thing, and now everybody's got a Go XLR. So
yeah,
to show that.
Yeah, so it clearly did work. Their marketing got in our heads. No, it's a good product at the end of the day. That's why everybody likes it.
I mean, I looked at GlitchCon, and I didn't personally see a lot of other exciting stuff that was unique to that. And it is just a one-day thing now, so it's going to be this Saturday, which is... I need to pull up a calendar. It's just a one-day event, as opposed to like a weekend-type thing like TwitchCon usually is. And they have basically like four different channels that are going to be going on the whole day, whether it's Twitch Rivals, Twitch Presents, or just Twitch. It's a lot of just kind of, in my opinion, regular content you'd see on any other day on Twitch. For the most part, there's some cool stuff that it seems they might do, like a you control the viewer type thing, which I think they've done on some things in the past, with someone walking around and looking at loot or something, and some of their merch. It seems kind of gimmicky to me, but maybe it's interesting.
I mean, I don't hate on them for trying, like, because at the end of the day, it does suck that TwitchCon isn't happening, because it's a great event and everybody comes back from it super motivated for streaming or creating content or whatever it is you're doing. But it's not for me, but I don't hate on them for trying it, because at least they tried, and some people probably will really enjoy it and, you know, have all four streams up on Saturday and have a good time.
There's a lot of cool people involved in it, it seems like, especially a lot of smaller streamers getting the spotlight. So that is cool to see them kind of showing some of the artists out there and just creators can be part of those events on the official Twitch broadcast.
Yeah, definitely. The Artist Alley, I think, is what they call it at the actual TwitchCon, right? So are they doing a virtual version of that?
Yeah, it seems like a couple sessions of them spotlighting artists. So that's pretty cool. And I do think that's a good way to use the event if they're going to do stuff like that.
For sure. Okay, what else we got to cover this week?
So the next thing we're going to talk about, I think, is the Streamlabs and PowerSpike partnership. So I don't know PowerSpike as well, but it seems like they're going to be doing a sponsorship opportunity through Streamlabs. Pete, do you want to talk a little bit about this one as well?
Yeah, so I mean, my understanding of PowerSpike, I think I've browsed the website a couple of times, but I do have a few members of my community who have spoken out about it. I think it's basically one of the 20 platforms that there are now where they try and match advertisers with smaller streamers or streamers of any size, let's say. So it might be playing a certain game, or it might be, you know, using a certain product on your streams, and basically trying to match streamers who stream to a certain size audience with advertisers who have a certain budget. And there's quite a few platforms like this for YouTube and for Twitch. But it seems like PowerSpike have now teamed up with Streamlabs, and they're offering sponsorship opportunities through Streamlabs platform. But the strange thing about this, as far as I've been able to tell, is that the PowerSpike partnerships, you have to go through Streamlabs Prime, which is Streamlabs' $9.99, I think, right, it is, service. So you have to pay to be able to have the opportunity to get paid partnerships from sponsors, which is just, that's a weird,
yeah,
weird situation.
That is weird. I didn't realize that was how that worked. I mean, I feel like the Streamlabs Prime thing is interesting, and I get like they're trying to monetize the platform, which makes a lot of sense because it's used by so many people, and it is, you know, the Streamlabs service is great. But the fact that you have to pay for Prime to get a chance to get money back is kind of interesting. I don't know kind of what opportunities are on there. Maybe they're premium partnerships of some kind that they want to gate to certain people. But yeah, first impressions, that's not a great experience, because honestly, like, if you want to get sponsorships and you deserve them, people will reach out to you from brands directly.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's that they're gating people based on whether they're paying for Streamlabs Prime or not. So it's not they're gating good creators and bad creators, you know. They're kind of categorizing people based on whether or not they're paying for Streamlabs Prime. And it doesn't really make sense from the PowerSpike's point of view either, because surely they want to please the brands and get the best people to run their campaigns rather than just, you know, limit themselves to the people subscribed to Streamlabs Prime. I don't actually know the details, though. Maybe PowerSpike is still open to everybody else, and it's just a much easier integration built into Streamlabs OBS even, that Streamlabs have built. I do think that there is some value in Streamlabs Prime because you do get a lot for your money, but I just don't know if it's the right way to work with a partnership team or an agency or something like that.
Yeah, I think with Streamlabs Prime, they're probably trying to figure out what to offer with that still, to an extent. I know the website is probably the biggest thing that you get with that custom website, but it is sort of a new service for them as opposed to just donations, which is their bread and butter. So my guess is they'll experiment with adding kind of add-ons as part of that partnership, kind of like Twitch Prime will just throw in random perks basically and kind of see what resonates with people. I mean, that makes sense from a brand perspective, and just see like if it's popular, then they can keep doing it. If not, try something else. So
yeah, I mean, Streamlabs have always been the kind of company that aren't afraid to try something, and I kind of respect that in some ways, because sometimes they will get a lot of flack from the community, you know, putting things behind paywalls, but at the same time, they're trying to like drive the industry forward. And I guess now that they're owned by Logitech, they're trying to turn a profit as well. So I don't hate them for trying it. I just think this is a weird thing to put behind a paywall.
Yeah, I think so too. Again, we don't know all the details here, so that's kind of on us. But my first reaction is, if you have to pay to get in there, it seems like you said that it's almost like PowerSpike isn't as concerned with who the creators are as much as just fulfilling a quota sort of getting people to sign up there. We'll have to see, look into it and get more details there, but I would be cautious about that. If you're looking into that program to pay for a sponsorship, that's generally not a great sign of what you should be getting into. It kind of reminds me of, you sometimes you see brands or orgs doing this where you have to buy like a shirt or something to be able to be part of the org, and that's always a little interesting because it just kind of looks like a marketing scheme to me. So just be careful is what I'd say. It could be good, not totally sure.
Yeah, I would definitely advise, if the only reason you're considering Streamlabs Prime is to get PowerSpike partnerships because you see some big brands on there, I'd probably advise against it, because paying to have the opportunity to get a partnership back is an interesting business model for sure.
Right. Absolutely. What else do we have next year? I think one cool thing to talk about would be the election, actually. Not directly, we're not going to talk about the politics of it, but the fact that it got so much coverage on YouTube and Twitch. And I'll call out Hassan specifically because there was a really cool graphic that came out from Stream Hatchet, which does a lot of stream data, which I'm a huge fan of. They talked about how Hassan individually was getting basically almost as much coverage on his channel as full primetime networks. So like Fox and CNN and their YouTube streams, Hassan was getting equal, if not more, than some of them. So it's pretty crazy that now we're at a point where just these individual creators are competing with full-blown networks that have been around for decades now and are pulling more viewership. I thought that was pretty cool, personally. I didn't watch a lot of Hassan's stuff, but just kind of crazy that even non-gaming stuff is getting so popular on Twitch with this kind of thing.
Yeah, I think the writing's been on the wall for a while, that you've seen big streamers pulling in numbers that rival, you know, big networks on their TV programs even. And I think it was just a matter of time before that kind of leaked into things that weren't gaming related, like the election. And obviously Hassan speaks quite a lot about politics, so it kind of made sense that he was the channel that did so well out of this. But yeah, I think major corporations are probably going to look at how popular it can be to have a personality and a stream, and how much influence he probably has as well. You know, these streamers, we spoke last week about how AOC did her stream with a lot of big personalities in the streaming space, and how much influence that can have. And I think if you do it right, it works very, very well. And Hassan obviously had something going for him where he was being able to rival those major news stations. The one question I had was, I presume that is the numbers being compared between, you know, Twitch stream and YouTube stream. So you're not actually including CNN's TV channel, right, viewership in that. But yeah,
but
it's still
if
very
you think
impressive.
About right. And if you think about like where you're going to go watch, if you're watching online and you want to go watch election coverage, a lot of people wouldn't think of Twitch as the first place to go watch that, versus like, I'll just pull up CNN's browser or, you know, Fox's YouTube channel or whatever you want to watch, versus Hassan. So I think that's pretty interesting that he's really competing there. And I think we'll see more channels do that and kind of compete with these big established orgs online. And then even, I think it will reach the numbers where it's hitting cable levels though, because that already happens with sports and esports and that kind of thing. So it does, like you said, I think it's kind of writing on the wall for that side too.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of leads on to something that I've been thinking about for a while. You know, some of the big streamers like Tim the Tapman, they sometimes co-commentate like NFL games.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how much that's going to start to come into play, and when they're actually going to be able to stream, you know, the full coverage and just be the commentator, and people would prefer to watch their favorite personality react to a game, you know, where it doesn't have to be quite as bias-free, and you know, they can, you can see the emotion of their team losing on this guy's face, versus, you know, the major super unbiased sports personalities that are on traditional television.
Yeah, I think that's honestly the future in a lot of things, especially sports is fun to talk about. But I've even seen kind of, you know, you and I are into League of Legends as well. It's funny how a lot of individual casters now are kind of overshining even like the official broadcasts of LCS or like the esports leagues, where you're seeing like LS and some of the R guys get equal, if not more, viewership than those channels. So I think that'll happen with sports too. I think people would probably rather watch Tim stream the football game than watch it on a news network. And I'm sure we'll see more people keep doing that, whether it's on sports or maybe other things as well. I think there's a lot of opportunity there for non-gaming content there as well.
I think it also definitely depends on how they work with the big streamer, because there's definitely going to be the temptation to like bring Tim the Tapman on as our like celebrity guest for our TV program and then still stream it to our channels, versus, you know, actually thinking like NFL have done and giving Tim the Tapman the permissions to be able to stream the game as it, with his commentary. You know, that's definitely the better way to do it, because then the fans feel like they're at home because they're on his channel and it's, you know, very familiar space, versus them having to put on a suit and like get on television and being really out of their comfort zone and not being as natural as they were when they were just sat in their room streaming.
Right, it's got to be authentic still. Like, you can't have them come on your show and then be someone completely different than who they'd be on their own channel, versus just using the audience they've already built and kind of working off that and making it really interesting to watch on that channel. I think that you're right. That's the way they have to do it. And I have seen some of that where sometimes you'll see, again, just to compare to esports, sometimes you see these big streamers go on to like official esports broadcasts and they're just totally different than how they are on their personal channels. And it's not quite as interesting for people versus if they were just to stream straight from their own channel, be their totally natural selves and give their unbiased coverage of what the event is. I think that often works better than trying to kind of wrangle everyone into your own broadcast.
Oh, I mean, we've talked about Tim the Tapman and Nick Merckx a couple of times in this podcast, but did you see the ESPN Sports Center? They tweeted like a, I think it was Call of Duty Modern Warfare clip of Tim and Nick like playing a funny moment in the game. And it's all that just sums it up to me. Like when a major news corporation tweets on an official channel video games, like it's just so, the opinion is so bad in the responses. I love going through the comments and seeing, you know, these old stubborn men being like, this isn't real sports. And oh, they get paid to
get these off my Twitter feed. Yeah. I think that's hilarious, but we've seen that happen a little bit already with just coverage of games. I feel like every time it happens, it's always over Twitter because the reactions are hilarious from people, like you said. But I think it's just really interesting to see like SportsCenter cover esports stuff, which they've done a little bit, but I've never seen it on Twitter specifically. So that was kind of interesting to me. Do you have thoughts on just that happening?
I mean, I've always been interested by it because I think it just never lands. Like, there's a lot of people in traditional sports who I think are starting to see the value of esports, especially in the pandemic when like sport got cancelled for a good few months. Like in the UK, our football, which is soccer for you guys, league has started back up again, and it's like super controlled during the pandemic. But at least there's sport on TV because there was a good like 3 or 4 month period where nothing was going on. You know, no Formula One, no tennis, no football, and it was awful. And these big news corporations or sports sites started covering, you know, gaming tournaments because they needed content to keep their traffic numbers up and keep, you know, money coming in. And it just never really works. And I feel like we shouldn't care if major news sites don't want to talk about Twitch and things like that because we've got our own bubble that's growing so quickly and massively. And, you know, we don't really want to be on TV. Like, I don't want the League of Legends World Championships to be on TV and my mum and dad to watch it. Like, I'm quite happy for it not to be, for there to be that separation.
Yeah, that's very fair. I think I agree with that, where we shouldn't be so concerned with them featuring sports on those channels. I think what's interesting to me is, like, why did they feature this on their own? Do you think, like, because to me, this is almost a sign, are they looking for somewhere new to break into because sports is a little bit less interesting to people? Like, is this a sign that they need to kind of mix up things and cover more esports to stay more relevant? I don't know. That was kind of my initial thought, is they're trying new things, but maybe you just think they're covering something and trying to make gamers happy.
I mean, the thing is, you look at the number of impressions that tweet got from SportsCenter, 39,000 likes at the time of us recording and 6K retweets. And then most of their actual traditional sport tweets are sitting around 5K likes. So, you know, the social media manager or whoever's pitching this to ESPN is saying, look at how many impressions we got. You know, look how many more eyeballs we got on our website or on our Twitter feed. It's working. So it clearly does work because it's entertaining to watch. And it probably also works because you get a lot of old grumpy men complaining about it, which just drives it up in the algorithm. But from their point of view, you can see why it's starting to happen. And it's just going to be one of those interesting times. But it's funny that ESPN is one of the sites that are talking about it, because I think, I don't want to get this wrong, but I think they let go of a lot of their esports staff this week.
You're right.
Do you remember much of that? Well,
yeah, I heard them discussing that, which is interesting. I know maybe it was probably an experimental thing when they brought it on. So I didn't look too much into this one, but you're right. It was definitely ESPN that let go of some of their coverage team for esports. But yeah, it's interesting to see them do that and then days later tweet out stuff about Twitch and seem like they need more coverage on it based on what you just said with the performance there. So that's kind of a mismatch.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? Maybe they're trying to cost save, and instead of having like a team of people covering esports, they're just going to have somebody in socials retweeting Tim the Tapman's clips.
Making old men angry is their new marketing scheme right there. Speaking of that, there's also, I think, one thing we should cover about quickly is the Xbox Series X/S, as well as the PlayStation 5 are coming out this week, which is pretty exciting. I guess maybe next week for you guys in the UK, it seems like. But yeah, either way,
we're always 1 week behind you guys.
Oh yeah.
Yes, just the way the world works.
Well, you're ahead of us in time, so I'm jealous of your time zone versus mine right now. But yeah, I think it's pretty cool because it's definitely going to change up, obviously, the gaming side for what titles are coming out. But hopefully the streaming side too. I'm not sure like what the native streaming side on the PS5 and the new Xbox will look like, if they've made updates to the Twitch app or other apps for streaming on there. But I think it'd be interesting to see if there's more power like straight out of those boxes without needing additional PCs or something like that to get more out of your stream.
Yeah, I'm not much of a console gamer, I've got to be honest with you. I never have been, but obviously running the Gaming Careers channel, there's a lot of people that do stream from consoles, either through a capture card or through like the Twitch native app. And now that Xbox, or Microsoft rather, have ditched Mixer, I wonder if we're going to see more of an investment by Twitch into their streaming app and YouTube into their streaming app. Because there are some services like Lightstream, I don't know if you've ever heard of them, which now allow you to stream from your Xbox or PlayStation, I think both, and still add overlays and your webcam and things like that through the software without needing a PC. So you can just have like a, you know, a rubbish laptop that's capturing you with a webcam, and you can still have cool overlays and, you know, your alerts coming through from Streamlabs and places like that. But it's definitely a space to keep an eye on, because I've seen a lot of buzz about these consoles, and even though I'm not going to play any games on them, I'm probably going to pick one of them up to do videos on how to stream from them and the best settings and those kind of things. So how about you? Are you a console gamer at all?
I'm really, man, once I went to PC, I did not look back, honestly. I've had an Xbox sitting on my shelf for years. That's a DVD player at this point. I mean, I'm excited for the games coming out, but I agree. I won't be streaming directly from a console. I do think that's probably the most accessible way to stream for most people, though. For people who maybe don't have a computer to stream off of that can handle gaming and streaming, or if they want to do console streaming, like they have to get a capture card and a laptop and everything. So just if you can stream right out of the box from Xbox and PS5, and it looks good, I think that could do a lot for the streaming space, because historically it's not been the best appearance to just use the Twitch app. Usually there's a lot of issues with the performance and the stream quality and that kind of thing. So assuming that these consoles are a lot more powerful, it could potentially be a lot better streams coming out of these natively without needing all sorts of add-ons, and it's just sort of like one setup, one tap, one go. And I think that could be big.
I think as well, if they do make these apps better on platforms like the Xbox and PlayStation, then more people are going to be watching streams on them. And then when people are shown to be watching them more, then people are probably going to be more interested in streaming as well. So I do think there's probably going to be an increase from these new consoles as performance goes up. But like you said, there has to be the investment from the platforms to make the live streams better, because that's been the biggest limitation. Is you can put a camera in a corner and you can have like two scenes or something that you can switch. You can switch from the app, but it's so limited. And the standard now for like a good quality live stream is so high if you compare it to even two or three years ago.
Exactly, yeah. And I think that stuff does exist too, like Lightstream and these awesome add-ons. But the problem is a lot of people will never know about those. Like if you just bought a console for the first time and you want to start streaming, you know, it's hard enough to find the Twitch app and figure out how to use it and set that up, versus just having something natively installed and it's super easy to keep going. I think they could do a lot, like you said, for just adding new people to watch Twitch or YouTube or any of these platforms, depending on how they do it. And if it's really good quality, then that just kind of raises the bar across Twitch as a whole for streams like that. And hopefully more people will watch better streams as a result.
Yeah, I wonder if like Sony and Microsoft don't want to push people to Twitch. I mean, there's probably some underlying things there, because at the end of the day, we're talking about huge, huge companies, and they don't want to give a helping hand whenever they can avoid it. So
yeah, and we'll have to see. I mean, I feel like it's always good promotion for the consoles in a sense. Like if you can show, hey, this thing streams natively out of the box with this great quality, that's a pretty good selling point for the console, especially over the competition if they have a better app. But yeah, I mean, you're still at the end of the day, you're fighting Amazon, you're fighting Google. So you got to be careful giving those things out for free, basically.
Yeah, and we saw with like the Google Stadia release that they were going to try and make that super easy to live stream from. So the platforms that also own a console, not that you can really call Google Stadia a console, but I guess it does fall into that niche, like that they definitely want to push their live streaming platform on it as much as they can. But because Twitch or Amazon doesn't own a console and Microsoft no longer owns a streaming platform, then there is that kind of space for Twitch and YouTube to be decent apps on these major consoles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I hope we see something good. I think that is probably one of the biggest frustrations for people is learning how to do all that streaming. And then even after you do it, it's not the best quality. So I still feel like even after all the experience we have now with streaming, it's still pretty hard to get going. And it's not as simple as it could be. So anything that you can do to make that easier for people, I'm a big fan of.
Well, I think that will probably do it for this week. We covered quite a lot. I'm sorry for harping on about DMCA once again, but you know, the times are just like that, I'm afraid. But yeah, really interesting episode. And obviously we're back every single week. One thing I do want to mention is I asked last week what we should do with the video from these podcasts, because we've been recording video along with the audio. And I know a lot of you are probably just listening to the audio because that's all we'd done previous to this. But I asked what you wanted to do. And a lot of people said, you know, throw it up on YouTube onto a separate channel so that the people that do want to watch the video and see, you know, Ben's beautiful face much more so than mine, then you can do so. We have done that. We have a Gaming Careers podcast YouTube channel. You can find it from the Gaming Careers official YouTube channel. It's one of the links in the top right corner, or it's in the description of most videos, or you can just Google search it, because you know you're all adults and you can do that. So we will be throwing these episodes up on there with the video if you want to watch on YouTube.
Yeah, guys, go watch on YouTube, because that's the only way you'll know what character I'm holding up right now. Audio listeners, you'll have no idea, so go find out. That's your incentive now.
Nice. All right. We'll catch you in the next one. Cheers, Ben.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you later.